G-53, Ford McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. What were you thinking? Leisha demanded of his partner, Sacco, while the latter stood beside the still shocked-looking William Godfrey. What could be so important that— Enough, Emma replied without making a sound, but with the thought coming across as a clear and intense order to everyone capable of receiving it, just as Leisha's had. Right now, that meant everyone present other than young Piper McCarthy and possibly, depending on whether Sacco had given him a telepathy patch, Godfrey too. Sacco and Leisha both turned to face her. Wait, are you communicating with them now? Godfrey asked the others all at once as he watched them standing in silence while their faces showed slight but discernible reactions to words he couldn't hear. Telepathically. Be quiet, Dan told him out loud, less firmly than Emma's instruction to the others, but still more direct than the manner in which he usually spoke to Godfrey. He issued no denial to the question about telepathy, considering it pointless to do so since he and the others quite evidently were in communication with the messengers, and since it seemed likely the situation would see Godfrey granted a patch before long. So you didn't give him a patch and speak to him before he got here? Emma asked Sacco, communicating telepathically by way of her own patch. Meaning he has no idea why you took him? No, Sacco said, but I had to. There has been a development on— Piper still has some kind of power, Emma interrupted, taking great care to remain silent in Godfrey's presence. She stepped forward urgently with the child in her arms and presented her to the alien with unquestioning trust. She knew when Leisha arrived in Buenos Aires and she knew when he left. Does that make any sense to you? Is there any reason why she could maybe sense Dan's thoughts or even see what he sees? I want to hear about your developments on New Kerguelen, but Godfrey should maybe hear that too. We need to talk about this first, before he has a patch. Sacco held his arms out directly in front of his body and opened his palms in readiness to take hold of Piper. Are you sure about this? Godfrey asked, the question going completely ignored. Piper looked uneasily at Sacco.
No, Lise,
she said. No, Lise, Emma confirmed out loud with a gentle smile.
This is Sacco. Sacco. He's our friend, too. Do you want to see Sacco?
Dan and Tara stepped forward to similarly reassure the baby that Sacco was indeed a friend.
Sack?
Piper said, looking slightly confused as she studied his face. No one could be sure if it was a question, but the inflection made it sound somewhat like one. Emma placed Piper into the alien's waiting arms without any further complaint and waited for Sacco to react. As New Kerguelen's foremost expert on interspecies communication and the granting and removal of uplift powers more generally, no one was better placed than he was to pass judgment on whatever was going on inside little Piper's mind.
I can't sense anything,
the alien replied after more than enough time for Emma and the others to know that he really had tried to.
Are you absolutely sure about this? And today only? She hasn't displayed any other signs.
Clark was first to instinctively reply, unthinkingly speaking out loud. This is the first time Leisha has shown up since—
Clark, shut up!
Terry yelled at him, shooting a look he would never forget. She beat Emma and Dan to the punch by mere milliseconds, and Clark felt like the naughtiest child in school as six furious eyes bore down on him. He had to fight off a smile. So relieved was he that Tara had cut him off in time, and so simultaneously surprised was he that he was the one who had forgotten to stay quiet while sending his reply to Sacco. The others were far less surprised by this, for what it was worth, but all three turned back to the aliens almost immediately, safe in the knowledge that Clark had gotten the message and wouldn't be talking again. That Godfrey now knew there was some kind of secret didn't bother anyone, as they were all aware that he knew Dan and Billy had ventured to New Kerguelen without knowing precisely what they had encountered.
Sacco, Leisha said, they have expressed a willingness to consider crossing the gate if the child's symptoms do not desist. Dan has many other ideas to search for answers to this question and more, both within the Great Shelter and New Birchwood. but I have promised to do all I can to help. If nothing else works... For several seconds, Sacco didn't reply. I have told them all about the transcripts we discovered from above, Leisha went on, and Dan wants to assist us in discovering exactly why the architects wished so desperately to keep us from our ancestral home city. His willingness to help is not in exchange for our assistance in healing the child, but the two may go hand in hand. Coming shortly after the similarly ominous symptoms, this was the first time anyone could remember Leisha using the term healing for what Piper needed, and the word choice was more than a little unsettling. More or less, all of them had spoken of curing her and freeing her of the core powers before those were successfully removed, seemingly so at least. But there was something about the word healing that didn't sit well. That infernal gate is why I am here, Sacco revealed at last. He gently handed Piper back to Emma, signaling not only that he could currently try nothing else to diagnose what recent word usage had seemingly determined to be a neurological affliction, but also that the conversation was moving on from it altogether. In a conversation filled with unusually evocative words that stopped Dan's thoughts in their tracks, while underlying the importance of what was being said, Sacco's casual infernal added an unmissable emphasis. William Godfrey, who could still hear absolutely none of these words, nevertheless knew that Sacco was gravely troubled by a new topic, the rapid and great changes in the alien's facial expressions that made this only too clear, words or not. What about the gate? Leisha asked, even more concerned by whatever kind of answer might come than anyone else. Sacco hesitated, as though considering his phrasing, then spat it out. Three young trainees from our recently disbanded squadron just tried to fly through it. Like some kind of alien vacuum bomb, Sacco's words seemed to immediately suck the air from not only the living room, but the lungs of almost everyone within it. Audible gasps escaped every mouth except for Godfrey's and Piper's, which was tightly closed as her atypically narrow eyes remained fixed on the alien who was so physically similar to the more familiar Leisha and yet gave off such a different vibe. Why? Clark asked, a reasonable question, if not the first one on most of the other lips around him. They acted in haste, Sacco replied, as the squadron has long been wont to do. When word spread that we found a doorway to the beings who have lied to us for so long, word which should have been contained by our fellow counselors so it could have been disseminated in a considered manner, like our news of the architect's deception was so recently, the chaos was instant. With the way members of the squadron have been raised and trained for generation after generation, recklessness and aggression are their go-to responses to any kind of problem. We all saw what happened when they came here, but even the rest of the squadron opposed this trio's actions, and indeed they have been most vocal in letting it be known. You see, for all their frequent recklessness, the squadron were also the caste best versed in military strategy and tasked with protecting our planetary security. Those with functioning brain cells recognize the risks that this gate poses, and separately from their concerns about what crossing the gate could bring, senior ex-squadron figures were also furious with the recalcitrance of these three trainees. No goddamn wonder they were furious, Clark replied without making a sound, shaking his head in disdain as he did so. Irresponsible insubordination of this kind angered him more than any of the others, none of whom shared his military experience, and would have done so even if the stakes weren't so high and the potential costs of the trainees' actions so great. Sacco's initial rundown had already touched on several important and relevant points about how the news of the gate leaking out on New Kerguelen, rather than being dissipated in a message management kind of way, had caused divisions. But when Clark thought about things from the perspective of any architects who might be present on the other side of the gate when a hostile trio of young squadron trainees arrived in a heavily armed warship, this point was amplified even further. It was almost like all the old discussions about what initial alien contact could have looked like, he thought. If the first time anyone on Earth had seen aliens arrive had been when the squadron showed up to hover menacingly above Beijing
before touching down and shaking hands with Jack Neal in Havana, rather than Leisha and Sacco's peaceful, if still initially disconcerting appearance at the drive-in, it struck Clark as all but certain that world leaders would have responded with an immediate and desperate show of force. Indeed, it was only thanks to the context of prior contact that Dan had been able to convince Slater and her contemporaries not to engage the squadron in a physical confrontation. For Clark, with a similar instinct for the basics of military strategy as the senior ex-squadron figures who were now dismayed by the recklessness of their former trainees, it seemed obvious that if the gate ever was going to be crossed from New Kerguelen, the first thing through it should have been as unmistakably non-threatening as possible. He wasn't sure quite how fully these parallels applied in reality, given that the architects already knew all about the messengers and the gateway connecting the two races' respective home worlds, and also given the obvious technological disparity between them. Nevertheless, it seemed hugely important that the first visiting craft to traverse the architect's gate from New Kerguelen wouldn't arrive with evidently hostile intent.
As I said, Sacco continued, the young trio acted in haste. Whether that was born of anger, a quest for revenge, or whatever else, the reaction of those three individuals has changed life on New Kerguelen as we know it. This has all happened today, since Leisha arrived in Argentina to bring the news of the gate's discovery. Leisha's always wide, primate-like eyes now opened wider still, reacting to this news like a pupil to darkness. His jaw slackened at the same time, bringing an alien expression that would have been comical to observe were the situation not so tense.
So what happened when they tried to fly through? He eventually asked, speaking for everyone in a somewhat weak tone.
This is the source of the greatest unrest our world has ever seen, Sacco said, the silent timbre of his telepathically delivered words somehow tinging them with something like a mournful sigh. The fallout could quite literally destroy everything.
Sacco, did they make it through? Clark impatiently interjected. Did they make it back?
Dan waited for the answer just as keenly, but was already taking Sacco's phrasing as a firm suggestion that they hadn't. After all, Sacco had clearly and quite conspicuously phrased his comment to stress that the trio had tried to cross the gate. That didn't strike Dan as a sentence structure anyone would use if the attempt had been successful, even an alien being doing its best to communicate with a group of humans, and so the main question in his own mind was in what manner the attempt had failed, rather than whether or not it had succeeded.
Their light craft was shot down by more senior members of the squadron as soon as their intention became clear, Sacco reported with a great deal of evident distress. None survived.